This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it's time for us to visit with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions about medicine and nutrition. It's an opportunity for you to pose questions to us via radio program at AOL.com. That's the email address where you send your questions, and we get quite a few each week, and we're very happy to field as many of them as we can today. How are you doing, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So, before we get to questions, I have in front of me this week's New England Journal of Medicine, the world's foremost medical journal. And amidst obscure articles like antenatal betamethasone for women at risk for late preterm delivery and pioglitazone after ischemic stroke, radiation plus procarbazine, you get the idea.
Oh, boy, like, yeah.
These are, you know, drug articles basically about medications. There's a very, very straightforward article here in the New England Journal of Medicine entitled Fresh Fruit Consumption and Major Cardiovascular Disease in China.
Oh.
So mom said make sure you eat your fruits and vegetables, an apple a day will keep the doctor away. Now we know that an apple a day will keep the cardiologist away.
Oh.
Thanks to an exhaustive multi-million dollar study in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Oh.
What that says here, the big study, between 2004 and 2008, they recruited 512,891 adults.
Wow.
From 10 diverse localities in China. And so that amounts to 3.2 million person years of follow-up. Over a period of, five and a half years, 5.6 years on average, they studied these people, and they tried to correlate their fruit intake with the risk of cardiovascular disease. And guess what they found?
What?
Fruit's good for you.
Hey, produce, yay.
And you know what's kind of interesting is you'd think in China, you know, that they often talk about, what was that book about the Chinese diet?
The China study.
Because they allege that the Chinese are really free of disease, of cancer, because they eat so much better than we do. According to the study, the Chinese don't eat much fruit. They eat, like, very little fruit. Look, it's a big country, 900 million people or 1.1 billion.
Lychee here and there.
Yeah, you know, it just depends where you are in China. If you're maybe in northern China, and, you know, people are not that well off. Fruit is expensive. Fresh fruit takes, you know, a lot of transportation. The season is growing, season is short. So maybe if you're in southern China and you're close to, whatever, lychee farm or something, you're going to get fresh produce. But, so anyway, what they found, not that surprisingly, is those who ate fresh fruit daily had lower systolic blood pressure by about 4 points, and their blood glucose levels were about 9 points lower. And so the net result was that they had lower coronary events, lower strokes, and there was a strong relationship between these adverse cardiovascular outcomes and the amount of fresh fruit consumed.
Well, there you go. Potassium.
There you go. So they said, well, in the discussion, they say, what's happening here? Why is it that fruit is beneficial? And, you know, we ought to say that to some extent,
it's replacing a Danish, which really is not in the Chinese diet.
It is indeed. And, you know, but they do eat a lot of, like pastry there. They really do.
Hmm.
And so what they found is that fruit is a rich source of potassium, as you say, dietary fiber, folate.
Which
is important in terms of homocysteine.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And various bioactive phytochemicals, which are, you know, these polyphenols, probably,
yeah.
You know, and each of which has potential cardioprotective effects. And it contains little sodium and fat and few calories. They're still on that fat thing.
Where oh, sure.
That fruit is
still on the fat.
It's a low-fat food. So the only problem would be, oh, and by the way, interesting here, too, is these patients in China were relatively lean, average BMI of 23.5.
Okay.
So fruit intake was associated with a higher body weight rather than a lower body weight.
That's interesting.
Interesting. So it actually plumped them up, but in that population, it didn't matter because they were already pretty skinny to begin with.
Huh.
And we do warn our patients, our overweight patients, don't fruit out.
That's right. Don't fruit out.
Don't
exactly.
fruit out. Because the fruit, excess fruit can be problematic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's still introducing a lot of fructose, which can be too much
right.
sugar.
And certainly we advocate against juicing fruit juices because for the kids, it will cause gastrointestinal problems. A major cause of gastro problems is feeding the kids a lot of fruit juice or
fructose.
Fruit drinks. Also, mm-hmm. it's a major source of sugar.
Yes.
And sometimes added sugar in these, you know, phony fruit juices that
That's
are artificially
true.
Flavored and with high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the natural fructose a little bit.
Yeah.
But it kind of depends on whether you're insulin resistant, whether you're pre-diabetic, or whether you're overweight.
Right, right. So, well, that's very interesting.
So thank you, New England Journal of Medicine, for assuring us that it's a good idea to eat fruit. There's finally a practical article.
Yeah. I do want to stress, yes, eating fruit is wonderful, and again, we don't want to fruit out because it can exacerbate insulin resistance in those who are prone or overweight, slightly overweight. The potassium is always good, but you want to choose lower glycemic fruits as well.
Well, what are some of those?
Your berries, all of your berries.
That's what I had for lunch. I splurged $5.99
mm-hmm.
for fresh berries here in New York City, but I wanted like a little dessert.
Yeah,
and I didn't want
That's
have,
your best dessert,
you know,
right?
For a chocolate bar.
Yeah, other low glycemic fruits: grapefruit, if you're not on medication, because grapefruit can interfere. Plums, kiwi fruit, peaches, cantaloupe. Cantaloupe, not if you're yeasty; it's not great for yeast or candida.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, many of those.
Right. So, and what are some of the fruits that you might not want to have too much of if you're insulin resistant? Possibly
like
watermelon?
Watermelon, bananas, grapes.
Because bananas are double whammy because it's sugar and a lot of starch.
That's
right?
True.
Sugar and starch.
Depending on its ripeness when you're eating it so
right.
as well. So those are the three fruits, what you just mentioned, the watermelon, bananas, grapes.
Right.
Maybe other tropical fruits to some degree, pineapple.
Pineapple is very sweet.
Yeah. It's very sweet. We do like the enzymes in pineapple. The bromelain
right.
is very nice.
Right.
But again, if you have to watch your sugar intake or your blood sugar or your tendency towards insulin resistance, then that's something you want to not fruit out on.
Yep.
Eat your vegetables and fruit should be the mantra, not eat your fruits and vegetables.
Remember
Hopefully one day that'll change. But
I remember my first trip to Hawaii when I was a kid. My parents took me to Hawaii. I was 10 years old. And they took us to the fields, the pineapple, the Dole pineapple plantations there.
Oh, wow.
And so you could actually get the pineapples right out of the fields. And it was ambrosia. I'd never tasted anything as heavenly as that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But full of sugar.
But full of sugar. Yeah, well, that's okay. You're on vacation and you're 10.
That's why we work out and jog and burn off calories.
Exactly.
And restrict other things that are, you know, sources of pure refined sugar. I think that allows us a little leeway.
Right, right.
All right.
Okay.
Good. So let's get to actual questions.
Yeah. We've got an email here from Cheryl. Cheryl says, was reading your article on magnesium. I've started having panic attacks at 21 weeks pregnant. I have a lot of the symptoms of magnesium deficiency, including restless legs, some insomnia, and it's really interfering with my daily life. What is a good dose to take while I'm pregnant?
Okay, so the answer is it depends.
Yeah.
Now, magnesium is interesting because we know that magnesium is okay in pregnancy because actually a treatment for preeclampsia is to give intravenous magnesium, which is massively higher than you would get by any form of oral magnesium. So I think magnesium is very safe to take.
Mm-hmm.
You can take upwards of 600-800 milligrams of elemental magnesium. You have to read the label because something that is a gram might only have 200 milligrams of elemental magnesium in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the physical pill might be 1,000 milligrams, but the elemental delivery is less, particularly with chelated magnesium. So the most absorbable forms of magnesium, magnesium glycinate, very gentle, less likely to cause diarrhea.
Yes.
If you want to go to the bathroom, take magnesium citrate or magnesium oxide, but those are less well absorbed. They do go out in the stool.
Right.
But a lot of women who are pregnant are constipated. So
that's true.
Kills two birds with one stone.
There's magnesium malate as well.
And there's magnesium 3-8, which we would give to a patient who has panic attacks because it seems to penetrate the blood-brain barrier.
Yeah.
Now, why would she be experiencing more panic attacks during pregnancy?
Well, she could be nervous about being pregnant, certainly, and the upcoming change in her life and becoming a parent. And
But there's actually, I think there's another more profound reason for that, is that female animals, like antelope, you know, in a herd, are much more skittish when they're pregnant than when they're unpregnant.
Ah.
They're actually more attuned to danger signals for a good reason, because if you're a solo female and you get wiped out by a lion, well, minus one.
Mm.
But if you're a pregnant female antelope and you get wiped out by a lion, that's minus two.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why...
You're in a more fragile state.
There's a little bit of a hormonal thing going on.
Yeah.
And I guess many husbands can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Some hormonal changes happening. But it could be that pregnancy thing and that it's a transient elevation in the anxiety.
Right.
Your restless legs responds to magnesium, but it also responds to things that
iron. Are
building blocks for dopamine, iron. Iron as well,
absolutely. Folate. Iron.
And that, it makes sense too, because during pregnancy, the demand for iron is greater, it goes to the baby preferentially, and you could be low iron.
Unless you're a teenager, interestingly. The nutrition will go to the mother of a pregnant teenager, will go to the pregnant teenager rather than the baby. I just remembered something from life cycle nutrition. Anyway.
Really? Well, maybe that's because the
who's
teenager
still growing,
has more...
Under 16.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
It will steal.
To,
okay. To some degree. I thought that was fascinating.
Right. Anyway. Well, that's probably not too applicable to this population.
Right. Right.
Because our demographic is not a lot of pregnant teenagers, probably.
Right.
Although, we got a very interesting email from somebody who listens to us from prison.
Yes.
He said he didn't...
That's going to be coming up in...
Yeah, if you could dig that out, because he didn't want us to mention his name for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got that in the stack, that's quite interesting, because, you know, you have time in your hands in prison, and you could be, you know, you can get an education.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really happy to hear that people have access to these podcasts and to our newsletter in prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won't provide people with any kind of escape instructions, or
we won't send you a file in a cupcake or anything like that.
In a gluten-free cupcake.
In a gluten-free cupcake, right? Yeah, exactly. I think that's a question we're gonna have for part two.
Okay.
By the time I dig that up, but I wanted to get back to the restless legs, some insomnia. We talked about iron. We talked about folate. The insomnia could be again. Your nervousness being in a fragile state, any of that, or just being uncomfortable being pregnant would also do that, especially...
You know, and the other thing that does happen, though, is I think this might be early in the pregnancy, and what happens later in the pregnancy is sometimes you get a lot more progesterone, and progesterone has a calmative effect.
Ah, yes.
So
that could be something. Maybe she's a little lower on the progesterone side right now.
Right.
Okay. So how much to take? The elemental, as you said earlier...
And then we would,
the types
what
of
we do in the Thomas Center is we check levels of red blood cell magnesium or ionized magnesium, Mm-hmm. And the levels are sometimes very low in people who take oral magnesium.
Right.
They sometimes require IV.
Right. Okay. So, I actually found that question.
Good.
Let's see.
We got a big stack there.
We've got a lot of questions. And I want to remind our listeners that we're probably backed up by almost 2 months. So if you're not hearing your question, please continue listening to the podcast. It should come up in 6 to 8 weeks or so. And we thank you for the questions. They're wonderful.
Keep them coming.
We've got a question, yes, from somebody who's been in prison, been here for 7 years, listened to your show all the time. My question is, I've recently ordered from your store, my brother did for me, I'm taking Mariva, I'm taking saw palmetto for prostate, I'm taking one of your fish oils.
Right.
And my brother got me the Carnivora Venus fly pills from another site.
Right, don't sell that.
Yeah. I'm 46 years old, 204 pounds and healthy. I'm concerned about the horrible diet they give us here, but can I take all these at the same time, including the Venus?
Well, seriously,
fly pills?
You know who was into that is your old mentor, Dr. Atkins. Carnivora was something that he often suggested for.
Are we talking Venus fly trap?
Venus fly trap.
Wow.
The Carnivora. It's like a carnivorous plant.
Okay.
Okay. And this is it's a popular remedy in Germany, but mm-hmm. I think specifically for cancer. And I can't tell you that it's going to be beneficial as a general preventive. So I have a feeling it's an expensive supplement, and I wouldn't suggest it.
Wow. But do you think it would interact with Mariva, saw palmetto, or fish oil?
I have no idea.
Hmm.
I don't suggest that you take it.
Okay. All right. Don't take it.
Right.
And thank you very much for your email.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like a Little Shop of Horrors kind of thing. Remember
right.
that movie?
Yeah.
The carnivorous plant.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I'm thinking, this is a question from Carol. I'm thinking I made a big mistake having a colon hydrotherapy. I've had a very bad case of eczema, and I read that hydrotherapy was good for skin conditions. Could you please comment? I've had gas and constipation and bloating, though the nurse did inject some probiotics at the end of the hydrotherapy.
Right. Well,
I like the idea of things coming out of there rather than going in.
Right. Well, look, I mean, I'm not the biggest advocate of colon hydrotherapy.
Uh-huh.
I think there can be some dangers associated with it, but rarely. You know, I've actually...
It could be root of infection. Well... Yeah, maybe.
No. In particular, people sometimes have thinned out intestinal walls due to diverticulosis, and mm-hmm. putting pressure in the intestine can cause one of these thinned out walls to burst. And that's actually what happened it didn't actually happen in the office of a colleague of mine, but he referred a patient for colon hydrotherapy to a handy-dandy colon hydrotherapist who was in the building,
uh-huh.
and they were administering colon hydrotherapy to a gentleman, and the perforated his intestinal wall for one reason or another, and he died. And unfortunately, the colon hydrotherapist had written that this doctor had referred the patient for colon hydrotherapy, so they went back to the doctor and said, that's crazy, why did you do that? You know, mm-hmm. you didn't do a proper physical exam on the patient before doing it, and... When push came to shove, he lost his medical license as a result of that. Now, you know, if it were truly super beneficial, I'd say, no, let's be cautious about administering it. I think it's, the principle is interesting because you can cleanse the intestine.
Yeah.
The intestine is a source of trouble. We now know that a lot of conditions are related to intestinal imbalances. But I think short of doing a colonic, you can alter your intestinal bacteria by diet change,
yes.
by using probiotics or fermented foods,
mm-hmm.
by taking certain herbs that suppress the growth of harmful bacteria, or if necessary, antibiotics,
sure.
preferably not.
Yeah. I wonder if colon hydrotherapy would be a good way to introduce fecal transplant.
It's actually the way that they do that.
Is
now,
that is how that they do it?
They do it via an endoscope.
Okay.
So they kind of try to put it up there.
Yeah.
But they're also experimenting with basically poop pills,
yeah.
which are,
I'd be frightened to take it orally.
It's just yucky, right?
Yeah, just the idea is right. Just perfect.
It seems more sort of medically scientific to, you know, put it up there rather than to take it by mouth.
All right.
But anyway, but do you think this person's irrevocably harmed? I think this person's got a bit of a scare. Mm. She's apprehensive about it. You know, I don't think that there's any irrevocable problem that could be created by that. I mean, mm-hmm. one might say that mm-hmm. through the pressure of the water, you can cause bacteria to translocate, maybe get pushed back up or something.
She's had gas, constipation, and bloating.
Well, there's often a correlation between gastro symptoms and skin conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so she clearly has some sort of imbalance or dysbiosis in the intestinal tract, and she's...
Or it could be that the probiotics that the nurse injected at the end of the hydrotherapy is what she's responding to.
I don't know if she has... I'm confused as to whether she had pre-existing gas and bloating or whether it...
She had it since... She's had gas, bloating, constipation since the hydrotherapy.
Okay, the bacteria maybe didn't agree with her, possibly.
Okay, that's something. Carol, we hope you feel better.
But I would relax about it. I think whatever, even if it's the probiotic wasn't suitable, I don't think it created a horrible infection.
Right.
I mean, that's another concern is, and it's less of a concern now because I think most colon hydrotherapists are well-trained. They clean and sterilize their instruments. But if you go to a disreputable one, the instruments may not be properly sterilized. And then there's the risk of transmitting infections, you know, hepatitis or something like that. That has actually occurred or, you know, potentially a bacterial or a parasite infection. So, the concern is the cleanliness and sterility of that.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the bug, the drug-resistant bug that's maybe hanging around colonoscopy.
Yes. It's equipment. Called Enterobacter or something like that, which is now very hard to eradicate, which there's been some cases of transmission via colonoscopy.
Wow. Carol, thank you very much for your question. Okay. Let's see here. We've got... a question from Pat. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, my husband is experiencing a little weakness after long runs, which he attributes to low blood sugar. The condition is resolved by taking 3 glucose tablets. Is there something he could do before his run to prevent this from happening? He's 80 and has been running for the past 25 years. He's in excellent shape, follows your nutrition advice religiously.
Here's the concern. The concern is he's 80 and he experiences weakness while running, right?
Yeah.
Now,
after long runs, a little weakness.
You know, frankly,
a little weakness.
A little weakness, yeah. You're going to be feeling a little weakness. I mean, I feel a little weak sometimes after a long run, or during a long run. But, you know, it is a concern if it's a new, if it's a change.
It's resolved by taking the glucose tablets, which will give you a quick rush of energy.
Yeah, but however, that could just be a placebo effect, or it could be just, you know, he thinks it resolves the... So I would get checked out.
Yeah.
Because... people who have run for a long period of time, they still can develop heart disease. They can develop ischemic disease where their blood vessels are closed, like Jim Fix, who was a great athlete and runner, but still developed, heart disease. And or there could be a valvular problem or a cardiac hypertrophy problem. You know, people who are long-term endurance athletes, they sometimes get big hearts. Or they sometimes develop valvular problems or arrhythmias.
Mm.
And so I would say, hey, just for the heck of it, you know, make sure that it isn't a blood sugar thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's just a little low blood sugar and you take a glucose tablet, you're better, it's one thing. But if it's you know, a heart-related problem, maybe go to a cardiologist, get a stress test, get an echocardiogram, make sure everything's okay.
Yeah.
So if it's glucose, though, that shouldn't be. That should not be, actually.
Right.
Because really... there's this notion that some of the best runners don't stoke up on glucose. That's kind of old school. Is that you're taking
you shouldn't be carbohydrate loading.
Shouldn't be carbo loading.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what's going on with this guy. I would maybe do a glucose tolerance test on him and see how his blood sugar is. Does he have reactive hypoglycemia? Maybe he has reactive hypoglycemia because he's carbo loading. Mm. You know, he believes. He's 80 years old. He's following a 1970s paradigm when he was in his prime of running, you know, when he was a 45-year-old. And he's still enamored with that. And maybe as a result, he has created reactive hypoglycemia.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with this guy.
You know what? Pat, you should get for your husband the book, The Paleo Diet for Athletes.
Beautiful.
And that might kind of even out his... and show him that too many carbs are really not the answer.
Lauren Cordain.
Mm-hmm. By Lauren Cordain's Cordain, The Paleo Diet for Athletes. So, yeah.
I also interviewed the co-author of that, who is a real... He's a guy who really is trains a lot of runners. And
Rob, somebody...
It'll come
somebody
back.
Rob, it'll come back. Okay.
Yeah. I interview so many people these days.
Thank you for your email, Pat. All right.
Okay, so that's all the time we have for part one of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We divide these podcasts into two parts. And give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
My mom back in the 60s used lecithin. Is it passé? How does it work?
That is so an Adele Davis thing, you know, the 1960s and 70s. Let's talk about lecithin when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.